Hilliard Lyons is proud to become a part of Baird, a trusted financial services firm that shares our commitment to the community. I'm Jeff Main, branch manager with Hilliard Lyons. You can learn more about Baird and our new partnership at HilliardToBaird.com.
All right, here we go. Hour number two, The Glass in the Afternoon radio program. New Sports Talk 98.7, AM 1370, and WGCLRadio.com, wherever you may be listening here. The 10th day, the 9th month, the year 2020. It's Thursday, so Keith is here somewhere.
I'm right over here.
Putting the lounge chairs next to the Taco Bell weather puddle.
Reservoir.
There's not much to reserve in there, buddy. We are low on gas. We haven't had any rain this month. So these things do happen, but it is very nice downtown. 81, looks pretty sunny from where we're sitting. Feels like 85. We've had a little humidity in the air today on a Thursday, but 85 was supposed to be, 86 was supposed to be the afternoon high. We're not going to get any warmer than 81. It doesn't look like. Maybe we'll sneak it to 82. And if you're looking ahead to the rest of the weekend, tomorrow night, Friday night football, whether you're heading to Edgewood for the big Owen Valley Edgewood Mustang black and blue game or north-south, the battle for the city. Tomorrow is perfect. 83 and 64, only a 10% chance. 87 on Saturday for those of you who like it hot, and 83 on Sunday. The best chance of rain is only 20%. Updated forecasts and live radar, WGCLRadio.com. Keith, are you ready for some football?
Ready for some football.
Well, we'll have David Hayes for you first. So ready for your money first. At 6 o'clock tonight, a quick jaunt to CBS Sports Radio from 7 to 7:30. And then Westwood One, NFL opening night. The world champion Kansas City Chiefs will host the Houston Texans, AFC South foes of the Colts. 7:30 pregame, 8:20 kick from a quarter full Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. That's usually the tradition for the National Football League. The Super Bowl champion kicks off the first official game of the year. Remember, there was no preseason football this year, so no. This is the first NFL game, period. No Hall of Fame game, no exhibition this, nothing.
They hand a trophy out or anything tonight as part of the celebration?
I don't know if they
game.
Do the rings or what, yeah, or whatever it could be, but we'll just be interested to see how the NFL, another pro franchise, a pro sporting league, how they handle it and get things going. Mm-hmm. And we'll see the evidence tonight. Tomorrow night, as we heard there from Joe Smith reports right before the top of the hour, a small crowd will be at the north right. side at Martin Memorial to make sure we are following all of the county necessities and rules and regulations that go with the new world we live in with COVID-19. North and south, if you can't go, we'll take care of you here. Chalk Talk at 6:30. Joe Smith, Dave Novak, all the action at 7. Bob Lovell, Indiana Sports Talk, follows our post-game show on Friday. Reds return to the radio on Saturday. They'll be in St. Louis to take on the Cards, 7 o'clock. And then Sunday, more NFL action, doubleheader. Colts and Jaguars from Jacksonville, pregame at noon, 1 o'clock kick. Dallas and the Rams from the brand-new SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles, 7:30 pregame for Monday Night Football. Check our broadcast schedules, check our daily programming schedules, and all the sports that go along with it. It's an easy place to find all of it, WGCLRadio.com. Every Thursday, just after 4:05, we head down to City Hall. And our great friend is?
The Deputy Mayor of the City of Bloomington, Mick Renneisen.
Hello, Mick. How are you today?
Are you ready for some football?
I just thought about I was going to say that to you, and then I left it alone because, as we did with Jenny Vaughn last hour, they are getting rid of that song for Monday Night Football.
Well, it's Thursday night. What are they going to do tonight?
I don't know. Is there a Thursday night song? I think they're
Did Carrie Underwood do a version of something that
Joan Jett
sort of took over?
I Hate Myself for Loving You, something like that.
Well, it's not quite that one.
It is, yeah. It's to that tune, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that is right. That
yeah.
is right.
So we'll do that. But the Hank Williams Jr. classic is gone because it includes lyrics of gathering with all your rowdy friends on Monday night. And we just don't do that anymore because of COVID-19. So there you have it. There's your update to that. So you are ready for some football, it sounds like.
Oh, I am ready for something to be normal, as I suspect anybody listening is too. So the beginning of football in the NFL, albeit with, as you mentioned, 25% of the fan base, still we'll get to see it on on TV. And since there have been no preseason games and no other live hitting, the first games of the NFL season are always, people are not injured yet. They're still flying around with all this vim and vigor. And I think two exciting teams to watch. What a great way to kick off a much anticipated but very different NFL season.
And we have actually 10 sporting events going on today on the 10th day of September. NBA, PGA Tour, the NFL, college football, MLS, WNBA, NHL, the U.S. Open Women's Semifinals, Major League Baseball, and a major on the LPGA Tour. That's today. That's what's happening today.
That's probably the biggest calendar for sports in a long time, I'd say.
The first time in history, 10 sports leagues and events will hold events on the same day across North America, it says here on Twitter. So it surely has to be true. How'd you do last week down in Eastlake, the Tour Championship? Dustin Johnson steamrolled everybody. He deserved his lead for winning, and now he has won again, and he's $15 million richer. I didn't write down your pick, but I forgot who you liked. Who did you take last week?
John Rahm.
John Rahm. He was there till the end, but DJ finished everybody off in style. He is your Tour champion. Well, he's a PGA FedEx Cup playoff winner. And picks up another victory for his time. Wine country this week, Mick. Napa Valley, Johnny Miller, Silverado North Course. It's not Pebble Beach, but it's inland. They are surrounded by smoke and fire and everything else. And they were delayed an hour this morning because the air quality wasn't very good. So they are getting warmed up. But it's next week we'll be looking forward to. That's the U.S. Open at Winged Foot in lovely New York, Westchester County. And our second major of the year here in September. So that's weird, but we'll take that as well.
Yeah, well, my backdrop today is a California coastal city near Pebble Beach, and I put that up in recognition of the start of the new PGA season.
Very nice. Is that,
as you said?
Is that, that's not Paso Tiempo, is it?
Nope, this is Spyglass.
Spyglass, okay.
But not too far from where they're playing the first event of the new season. And I'm going to go with Phil Mickelson because I think he's been out of action for a while. Obviously didn't play in the FedEx Cup, hadn't played well. He loves to play in California. I know he's trying to gear up for Winged Foot. I'm not so sure he's going to be a big factor there, but I do think he might play well this week. So that's my pick.
You'll have to remember Phil won on the Champions Tour just a couple weeks ago, and he is in the clubhouse today, 71, one under par, tied for 39th. And the second part of the second half of the draw is just getting out now. They were a little delayed this morning, as we mentioned. So there you go. At least you're under par. There's nothing wrong with that. Long way to go in the world. And then we'll see again. Light field this week. I equated it to the skinniness of Manute Bol because everybody is getting ready for Winged Foot on the opposite coast next week. Phil doesn't have to worry about that because his jet just goes as fast as he needs it to get there. And be fine. We could go on all afternoon, Keith. I know, talking about golf, talking about everything else. We'll get to city business here in a minute. But 20 years ago today, Mick, Indiana University fired Robert Montgomery Knight as the basketball coach. Where were you? What were you doing? Were you at the scorer's table at that time? Give us a little footnote of the where Mick Renhuizen was 20 years ago today.
Well, yes. Of course, it happened in September, as it is September 10th, and we were not playing games yet. I was quickly called by a friend of my wife's who worked for ESPN as a producer, wanting to talk to me and Jared Jeffries at the time, who was a recruit, and to try to get some intel about what was going on. So I remember that vividly, and then I remember the protest that happened in Dunmeadow and around the president's house. And I would say that was the largest protest that we had seen until what we saw this past summer on the courthouse square related to the killing of George Floyd. So yes, that was a momentous period of time for our community, a very tumultuous time as it related to a coach who was, beloved's a strong word, but you know, he certainly had a lot of people who supported him, and then he had his detractors too, but an icon in our state. And so that's what I recall about that time period back then.
And as we move forward, dare I ask your opinion of how the situation went down and what you thought at the time, and Does time heal all wounds, as we saw Coach Knight on the court at Assembly Hall earlier this year?
Well, it was great to get him to come back. I was happy I was not here. I was actually where my screen is at the time, volunteering at the golf tournament. So I watched it on my iPhone in a van while I was between duties, because I wanted to see how the fans reacted, and they were great. And it was just great to see him back at Assembly Hall. So I'm glad that closure happened 20 years later. It was, I think, important for a lot of reasons, but mostly, for Coach to have a chance to come back and be recognized for the good things he did when he was here and erase some of those memories of that, of that event 20 years ago. I will say too, everybody has a boss, we all do. And sometimes you can run afoul of that boss for whatever reason. Those reasons may differ about who caused what and when, but that was something that Coach had this zero tolerance guideline he was supposed to follow. And according to his boss, he didn't follow that. And that probably led to the demise of his coaching career here. So, all water under the bridge. Now, the good thing was that he got back here, the fans got to see him, and that closure's happened.
Mick Renhuizen's the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington and checks in with us every Thursday. What was your position 20 years ago, Mick? Were you in the Parks and Rec, or what were you doing?
Yes, I would have been the Parks and Recreation Director 20 years ago. I started that position in 96.
Back when he was 22 years of age.
And I was doing statistics. That's been 35 years of that. So I certainly spanned a number of Coach Knight's years. And I think I may have mentioned to you guys before, certainly Keith may remember this from our previous interactions when I was a student and working at WTIU-FIU with him and Mickey Klein, was that we did a lot of games for the station back then. And I had a chance to interact with Coach a bit in those engagements before I became a statistician. And I also had his Coach Knight's class, basketball coaching class. And I would say this, and I told him to his face, it's the best class I had in college. No offense to all my other professors, but it was a topic I was very interested in. He was present. He was there at every class. We had he shut the door at 8 o'clock in the morning and locked it. If you were late, you were not going to be allowed in. And I'm not real sure you wanted to come in if you were late, because he did not tolerate that. And I think that's not a bad thing.
I don't think he could make students in his class run the steps at Assembly Hall, could he?
Well, the second part was we had a lab. A lab session was conducted by the assistant coaches. So, we had Coach Cruz at the time, and I'm trying to remember who all. It wasn't Felling's era. It was before that. So I'll have to think of some of the other ones.
What year was this?
This would have been like 1978.
Oh, the Mike Krzyzewski, the one year he was here.
Yeah, he might have. Sadly, I don't remember him being there.
Then he probably wasn't.
I don't remember him, which would be a terrible shame, because obviously he's a. Turned out to be a pretty good coach after being a graduate assistant at Indiana under Coach.
Not bad.
As well. But yeah, those are my memories of that time frame, and even going back my sort of a little bit of history with Coach Knight. And I really do believe he was a great teacher, and most good coaches are. If you can coach really well, then you're a good teacher. And he could have taught history or any number of other topics, and he'd have been fascinating to listen to, because he was very knowledgeable, is very knowledgeable.
Mick, changing topics now. Last night you had a meeting where the mayor was dealing with the county income tax, and that was the first of two meetings. And you're getting a lot of pushback from some people in the county on that. Where is that headed, and what came out of last night's meeting?
Yeah, so just kind of a brief history of this. Back in the mayor's inaugural address for his second term back in January, seems like eons ago, he had mentioned an interest in doing a 0.5% increase in the income tax for sustainability initiatives, climate action, and those kind of things. And we thought then it would, we would maybe increase the ability for the transit service to deliver more services to city and county residents, and of course then a whole array of other things that we had not identified specifically at the time, but wanted to at least get the concept out there that we thought it was going to be important to invest in some things, and we needed a new revenue stream to do so. Well, then just within a few months, and we had had our first public meeting about the 0.5% proposal in March, where there was a good number of attendees at the mill, on site when you can still meet in person. And then, as we all know, the last 6 months have been occupied by COVID and social and physical distancing and mask wearing and, you know, everything else that's disrupted our daily lives. So there is a time parameter for when you consider a tax that it has to go before all the other tax council entities, which includes the town of Ellettsville, the county council and the city council, and Steinsville. Steinsville is a part of the tax council. They just don't have a vote. The other entities all have votes that are prorated based on the number of the percentage, the populations of their respective jurisdictions. So the city council has always had the majority of the percent of those votes at about 58%. And then it's a little less than that for the county, obviously less than the total number has to equal 100. And then Ellettsville has the smallest percentage and Steinsville doesn't have any. So the state legislature just a year ago changed that voting protocol from a simple majority of the city council, a 5-4 majority, would mean the city council's 58 votes would be cast in favor or against of any tax increase. And that would have had the tax go through if we would have proposed it under that scenario. State legislature changed that, and now the votes are apportioned so that each council member of those three areas that have representation has a percentage of the vote calculated by a member. So now the city council's vote means 8 of the 9 would have to vote in favor for it to be adopted as opposed to 5. So that's a considerable difference. So that's a little bit about the trajectory of it when we started talking about it. The second part is the timing is crucial in that if you don't approve the tax or consider the tax before November 1st of this year, then the next window to collect the tax or to consider the tax substantially pushes out the date when the tax could start to be collected. And we think it's important given the income loss and budgetary losses that will be experienced in the coming years because of the COVID pandemic and the impact of that it's had on incomes and the economy in general, is such that we'll need that revenue before that next timeline for considering the tax could have happened. So if you back time all that into, well, we got to have the county council, give them a chance to vote up or down on it. We got to have the Ellettsville town council have the chance to vote. Statutorily, it tells you that you have to back into that time frame to give those other jurisdictions notice. That backed us into where we are, September 9th and 16th for the city council to consider their vote. And then the county council in Ellettsville have the time they need before that October 31st, November 1st deadline. So that's why it may feel like it's a little faster track than people are comfortable with. But if you really think about it, we started talking about this in January and March, and then COVID interrupted, and we brought it back in the last couple of weeks at a different rate, half the rate, 0.25, again, as a nod to the economic downturn that's been taken. So that I'll stop there and let you ask your next question. The next step is, of course, September 16th, the city council will have their full committee of the whole, and then they'll have to take a vote. Suppose they could opt to delay it. They talked a little about it last night, but that has a ramification that they need to explore. And if they're willing to have the possibility of that affecting the time schedule as it's been proposed, which is their prerogative, then we'll have to wait to hear what they have to say. We believe that it should be considered and voted up or down next week.
If the county people, and we're talking about the main county, Monroe County, Bloomington kind of people we see in the news a lot of late, all oppose this. Can it still pass?
It can. If 8 city councilors vote for it, then it passes because the city council's votes count for 6.84 per voter. So 8 times 6.84 is greater than 50%, and that's all it takes to pass the tax.
So your real goal right now is to get all of the city council people to be in favor of this.
That's correct. And while that may feel like a heavy-handed play to others, and we would prefer that there would be support elsewhere. Now, remember, this tax benefits the county as well. It benefits as in they would get $4 million, just like the city would get $4 million, to spend on whatever their priorities are in the economic development phraseology that the state legislature has created for this tax. It's called an economic development LIT, or local income tax. It's pretty broad, but you know, obviously there's got to be some economic benefit to the investments that you make with the dollars that come from the tax.
Is the argument, Mick, that it's not the right time to tax people, or people are losing jobs or being furloughed, and it's just that's a burden they don't need right now?
Well, let's first say that if you've lost your job, you're not paying the tax. And of course, that's not meant to be flippant, but it's only people who are employed that would be paying the tax. Any time to add a tax is never viewed with any delight by most people, although we have had, I'd say the city council has told us, their council attorney, that the calls that they get at the council office are pretty split, about 50-50. Some people see the need for investing in, remember, the lenses of this tax increase from our perspective are climate justice, economic justice, and racial justice. And underneath that are projects that we think touch upon, you know, at least one of those, if not all three of those investments that we would make. So, you know, if we're going to expand our transportation infrastructure, whether that's bikes or sidewalks or, you know, transit at some point in the future, if we're going to actually adopt some of the measures involved in our transportation demand management plan that we got last year, if we're going to improve our transportation infrastructure, not just the ones I mentioned, but in other ways, you need dollars to do those things. And we do know that the economic downturn is going to reduce the amount we have to do those things in the future. So the question of our community is, do you believe in investing in these things that affect your quality of life, affect the quality of those people's lives at the lowest end of the economic spectrum, and help our community stay vibrant coming out of this pandemic crisis? Or do you just want to fold the tent and say, well, we're just going to all have to cut back on everything? And, you know, will we love the community that we've built into what it is if we do nothing with no new resources in the future? So that's kind of really a 180 degree look at it. We could do that. One could say, well, yeah, we don't want any more taxes, any more kind of a tax burden. Remember, this is $25 on income of $10,000. So it's not nothing, but it's not a significant amount. And do you believe these investments are worthwhile so that coming out of this pandemic, we can rebuild Bloomington, recover forward, as the mayor says, in a way that helps us capitalize on what makes Bloomington a special place to live, work, grow your business, and thrive? And if you don't, you think you just are sick of any more taxes being taken out, we understand that. Unfortunately, the county may view this differently. They'll get the $4 million if it goes through, whether they want to or not. And we've told the city council last night, we'll lobby again with their help, the state legislature, to allow cities to only pass their tax for their jurisdiction. We've asked for that for years. The state's never granted us that option. This is the option we have at the moment. These are the cards we've been dealt. We're playing the cards we're dealt. If it changes, the mayor promised last night we would rescind this countywide tax if the county doesn't want it, and we'll go back and ask just the city to pass its own tax. But that's not reality now. The reality is it is a countywide tax at the moment.
We're speaking with Mick Renneisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. Mick, it was an open question meeting last night. What was the tone of the questions you were getting?
Well, kind of the great question, kind of the what you would expect, like, tell me how this is going to help people at the lower end of the income spectrum. And that's where I would point to those who don't have cars or need more transportation mobility options are going to have those with the investments we would make in sidewalks and high priority bicycle network things, and the Jack Hopkins Fund, which is the fund that funds social services that the council awards every year. We're going to double that from $300,000 to $600,000. All of our arts community opportunities that no one is able to participate in now because of social distancing, you know, those people, all those groups are hurting. We'd like to invest back in our arts community, including a building that Keith, your entity, the Ivy Tech group, is about to return to the city at the end of the year. That's the Walden Arts Center. And so we want to see if we can stand that up and keep it as a vibrant arts center for the community, among many other arts groups that need help. We want to invest in jobs by helping people in the life sciences area and in underemployed areas where we can hire people that are homeless now that are looking for ways to get homelessness. We want to invest in some of our own government infrastructure. Our parks programs, not so much programs, but their infrastructure and so forth. So those are general areas. You can see all this. If you go to the city's website, you can see a capital plan laid out for 5 years. Remember, a plan is just that. It's not carved in stone. It's subject to community input. It has to be updated every year. So whatever you see in there, if you go, I don't really like that, or that's too much for that, or too little for that, we totally understand. That's what the council was asking us last night too. And Remember, these are just suggested ways the money could be spent if it's passed, not exactly carved in stone projects that would have to be passed. We would certainly want our public to weigh in on this.
In another area of questions, since last we talked, the city council was preparing a bunch of questions. You had 200 questions to deal with on the budget, the city budget. Separate issue, but it's into what do you, how did that all turn out? Because those questions will help guide where the final tax base is for the city budget.
Yes, that was the most robust list of questions we've had in a while. I think that's healthy and good. We were happy to answer them. There were actually about 142 official questions. Some had two and three subsets in them. So I estimated that we probably had close to 200 responses. 55 pages of answers, if that helps any. That too is going to be posted online. The city council got the answers yesterday. As soon as they've shared them with their members, they'll become public and we'll post those online. And, you know, again, this is just being transparent about the $100+ million that the city spends in its general fund and other funds and how we plan to spend it for 2021. Remember, $4 million of that is Recover Forward. Some of the very things we're talking about that the LIT would then cover, the LIT being the new tax we're proposing after we spend money in the 2021 budget out of reserves. We're spending several million dollars of our reserves. Fortunately, we have healthy reserves, but that's not an endless opportunity. You get your reserves down to a certain number, then you got to stop spending. You got to prepare for the next rainy day that might happen. So 2021 proposes expenditures out of that rainy day fund, 2022 and beyond. There's no funding unless something new like this tax occurs, so we can replace those lost revenues with the new revenue that we might be made available. And we respect that this is all coming from our residents, and they should be asking all the questions they're asking now.
Mick Renhuizen is our guest. He is the deputy mayor from the city of Bloomington. You had a leaf collection meeting last night. How'd that go?
Yeah, I didn't get a report back from our innovation director, but I'm excited to talk about our innovation project or our approach with this. This is from a Bloomberg philanthropy grant that we received to help us get staff trained on how to solve community problems. And we were competitive and won this grant again before COVID hit. We started up in March and then had to suspend it because they actually bring coaches from the Bloomberg Training Center to help train our staff on how to go about solving common problems that we have. And so we were trying to find a way to more efficiently collect leaves, not just from a cost standpoint, also reducing some carbon emissions from the big equipment that has to do it, but also just, you know, satisfying our residents. You know, the leaves in Bloomington fall for many months and we only collect them for about 6 weeks.
Yeah, they just don't fall on the third Tuesday after the third Monday in October. That's just not how it goes.
Yeah, so we're trying to solve a way to make the leaves all fall at once. No, we're trying to solve
a great
problem from another different angle. But but anyway, so that process started. We're going to have two neighborhoods that are going to be pilot neighborhoods. They're going to help us experiment a little bit with their leaf collection program to see what we can learn before we take another dip of our toe in the water to make a more substantial suggested changes to the leafing program in future years.
Hey, Keith, I can solve this problem in 1 minute.
How?
You just put the vacuum down by the grate that goes into the sewer. That's where all the leaves go anyhow.
That's right.
Start there. Work
That's
your way
why
back.
They're trying to figure out a way to collect them. They don't want them going into the sewer.
Collect them at the grate. That's where they all go.
Should have invited you to our meetings.
Well, you never do, and I'm not expecting an invitation anytime soon. Halloween. That is far enough away, but just far enough.
Boy, that's controversial.
Well, it's not controversial. I go to the grocery store, and there's pumpkins and candy everywhere, so
yeah,
I'm guessing.
There are cities that are canceling it.
Well, Mick, what say you?
Too soon to make a determination, but let's just say.
If you're not inviting me to your meeting, I'll give you my 2 cents on this here in a second.
Okay. At the pace of the infectious rate going the wrong direction in our community, I would beg to suggest that we probably won't have the normal version of Halloween trick-or-treating that we would have had in the past. Now, that's very preliminary. The mayor's not weighed in on that. We're obviously watching the statistics weekly to see how things trend. But right now, if it trends the way it's going, I think that's a pretty unlikely route. That's a pretty unlikely tradition that we would want our families and kids to be doing this year.
I would go the other direction and saying when you go trick-or-treating, it's a lot easier to say, you trick-or-treat with your family, and when you go door-to-door, who are you interacting with? Kids have masks on already. It's Halloween, for crying out loud. This is a perfect marriage.
Well, let's talk about the touching everything part.
You don't have to touch anything. You just sit there, you stand there with your bag open, and the person who answers the door is shooting jump shots into the pumpkin or whatever it is. And if they go in, you get your candy, and if they miss, you can rebound it off the deck, and away you go to the next house.
Well, that's two innovation suggestions from you already. I'm going to have to put you on our innovation
team.
That's it.
It's the Don't Touch Halloween program.
Tongs. You shoot jumpers.
You fire them in there, and then everybody's – the candy has wrappers on them.
Is that proposal CDC approved? Have we checked that?
Oh, of course, yes. Yes. It's Maria and Mikey approved because dad needs candy, and that's how it works. Yeah. We will keep our ears open for the official statement on Halloween, but I know that of course, that's crossing people's mind because it's a fun time for kids. It's another marker in the race to, I don't know, Christmas, Thanksgiving, or whatever else. And we're not going to go out and buy costumes if we're not going to be able to get out and trick or treat. So that is a popular one. We've put it off long enough. It is time for the torture chamber from Celeste. Trivia at the city level, at the graduate level, at the PhD level, as we do every Thursday. I have my crayon, Keith. Do you have yours?
I need something to answer questions.
There we go. We need an attorney is what That's we need right. to help us answer these
What's
questions.
The topic, Mick?
Well, the topic is it's history, and it's United States history, and it's the formulation of our country's history. Okay. And interestingly, I didn't know that until Glass mentioned that the anniversary of the Bob Knight firing was today, too. It coincides with this day, but in 1776 on this day.
Oh, sure.
Arnold Palmer's birthday is today.
Well, there's a third connection.
91 he would have been.
Wow.
In 1776, the United States formally adopted its name in the Continental Congress. To celebrate, this week's trivia is all about the naming of territories. So,
territories,
first question,
Keith.
What was the original proposed name of the United States, which was contained in Richard Henry Lee's draft of the Declaration of Independence. The original proposed name of the United States. Was
Northwest
it
Territory.
A, United Territories, B, United Nations, C, United Colonies, or D, United Airlines?
Well, we can eliminate a couple of them. Well,
yes, we can. What was the first one again, Mick?
United Territories. United Nations, United Colonies, United Airlines.
It's either territories or colonies.
I'm going to go with colonies because they were the 13 original colonies. They were not the 13 original territories.
Did they call them colonies then?
I don't know.
Is that our name for it? I'm going to go territories.
And I'm going to go colonies.
Glass is right. The name change, United Colonies, affected all future documents as well as those which had already been written, so they had to change it to reflect United States over United Colonies, which was the proposed name.
I like states more than colonies. Colonies sounds like ants.
Yeah.
It does. Probably why they changed it to states. Number two, who was Monroe County named after when it was created from portions of Orange County? I did not know that. Was it named after Alan Monroe, Bill Monroe, James Monroe, or Earl Monroe?
I'm James.
Earl the Pearl Monroe.
I'm going James.
I think we'll go with president number five, James, or was he number four? Was it Madison Monroe or Monroe Madison? It doesn't matter.
Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe.
So he was the fifth. And then there is Madison County and Adams County and Washington County. So everybody, they're pretty popular for your president. We will go with James Monroe, the president.
That is correct. The name was settled upon in 1818, 1 year after Monroe had entered the office of the presidency. So I often hear people say Monroe County.
Oh, well, yeah.
Monroe.
But now you know the history is James Monroe. I believe that's how he pronounced his name. So I think that is the correct pronunciation because that's who it's named after, James Monroe.
I agree with you. Okay. And by the way, Mick, how did Monroe Lake become Lake Monroe? That's just as confusing.
Yeah, start another issue.
We could do a whole, Celeste, have a little.
I'll get trivia right on that.
There you go.
Expert.
Do you have a button underneath your desk that if something goes wrong in the trivia, you buzz Celeste to let her know that, next week has to be done?
I do have a button. I've never tried that particular use of it. I might get a different response if I push it.
There you go.
The button Mick has is the trap door key, so if anybody comes into his office starting
That's
trouble,
right.
he hits the button and the trap door opens up. Question
your
number
final question.
Three.
Why was Bloomington named Bloomington by the Kentuckians, Tennesseans, and Carolinians that settled the town? Was it A, that the town grew in size very quickly? Was it B, the town had much more natural greenery than other settled parts of Indiana? Or was it C, the tallest building in the country at the time was built at the founding of the town? Or was it D, the town attracted unusually happy people as its residents?
Has to do with blooming. It's had to do with the whatever that one was about
the greenery.
Greenery.
I think I'm going to have to agree with him because if it had that many people growing so quickly, it would already have a name. Yes, let's go with the nature aspect of it. Greenery.
That is correct.
3-3.
Yeah, 2-3.
We should dance.
You guys did pretty well today.
We should. We should.
So here's the caveat to that. Bloomington is often considered to be the beginning of southern Indiana, an area much hillier and greener than the northern half, which is what I often say. When you drive down from the north and you hit Martinsville, you begin to see south of Martinsville, it's an entirely different landscape. Mm-hmm. And it changes incrementally from Indianapolis down. But rolling hills are very noticeable.
That's when the glacier ran out of gas.
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly right.
When it melted,
the glacier ran out of gas.
That's right.
We're going to run out of Zoom time in less than a minute. So.
Mick, have a great weekend.
Thanks, Mick, for
your time. Everybody enjoy Kirkwood. They're putting the bollards up this afternoon when I was down there. So that's part of the big weekend as well. And we'll do it all again next Thursday.
Thanks, guys.